Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. This week, journalist Russ Baker talks of FBI corruption, deep politics and the deep state, the Boston Marathon bombing, and the failure of the news media. And yes, those are all related. I hope you'll stay tuned. Normally, what you hear on New World Notes isn't much connected to the day's news headlines. But today looks like an exception. As I speak, jury selection continues in the Boston Marathon bombing case, and the defendant's attorneys have just requested a change of venue. And we are actually having a show on the Boston Marathon bombing case. We'll hear a talk investigative journalist Russ Baker gave this past August 2014. A few years back, Baker wrote a fine book on the deep state and the Bush dynasty called Family of Secrets. Baker runs the investigative website whowhatwhy.org. And it turns out that Baker has been investigating the Boston Marathon bombing of April 2013. He hasn't solved the case, but he has concluded three important points. One, the government's official version of what happened has many parts that don't make any sense or seem extremely unlikely. Point number two, the government and its security apparatus engaged in some highly unusual and maybe illegal actions before and after the bombing. For example, 4 days afterwards, essentially declaring martial law in Boston and vicinity, shutting the city down, forcing people to stay in their homes while police searched for two individuals. That had never happened before in U.S. history, Baker says. What the heck was that all about? Point number three, the corporate-controlled media have done essentially no investigation of the bombing. They have acted only as a mouthpiece for government officials. This will come as no surprise to New World Notes listeners, but there, the media did it again. Not only the corporate media, but alas, most of the alternative media, too, have also dropped the ball on this one, just as they did on the 9/11 story. A quick recap of events. Two bombs exploded in Boston during the marathon, April 15, 2013. They killed three people and injured 264. 3 days later, two brothers from Chechnya, Dzhokhar and Temerian Tsarnaev, were named as the lead suspects. Later that day, the brothers allegedly killed an MIT policeman and allegedly hijacked a car. The car's driver, identified only as Danny, states that the Tsarnaevs confessed to him the bombing and confessed to killing the policeman. The next day, April 19, martial law and a huge manhunt. That day there was a gunfight with police and Temerian Tsarnaev was killed. Later that day, Dzhokhar was found and arrested. Back to Russ Baker. He spoke in Seattle in August 2014. His talk is fast-paced, and it goes off on many tangents. I get the impression he was in Starbucks just before the speech, and he had one espresso too many. Anyway, for radio, I've edited out some of the tangents. On the Boston bombing, deep politics, and the sins of the news media, here is Russ Baker.
And so what I'm interested in talking about is how things work. I became interested in it back in 2002, 2003, I was living in the Balkans training journalists there in investigative reporting, and we were getting the first rumblings about a possible war in Iraq. It seemed very clear to me that they just wanted to go to war, and I wrote pieces saying that. And then the war happened, and I, living there, I noticed that the coverage of the war, it just occurred to me that my own profession wasn't doing a very good job or even a very honest job of dealing with what was going on. And so the next thing that happened was everybody said, oh, well, George Bush either lied or somehow put out false information to cause a war. And there were no weapons of mass destruction. I'm sure you all remember that. And then I thought, well, he must be done for, because how could you possibly survive that? Well, by late 2003, early 2004, there he was running for re-election with good poll numbers. And then it turned out it was going to be John Kerry. And I said, well, then it's pretty much all over, because here's Bush, where we've heard that he skipped out on his own military service. And here's John Kerry, this bemedaled war hero. And, you know, the war hero is, at the time, was, you know, more or less anti-war. And the guy who'd skipped out was pro-war. And I said, that's an easy one. There, it's going to be a walk. Well, it wasn't a walk. And then all these things started happening, like Kerry started having all these problems. And right when the focus was supposed to be on Bush and his being AWOL, they started looking at Kerry's military service. And they were alleging that he had somehow not really deserved his Purple Heart. And he'd been in the Swift boats, but he had lied about some of that. And I was just sort of amazed at that. And then we had this, the Swift Boat veterans, remember those ads and so forth? And then there was that big explosion with Dan Rather and CBS News, which was about how the media was falsifying something, not about how Bush was falsifying. And I thought, somebody's up to something here, and they're very, very good at it. And I thought, you know, maybe there's another way to look at how these things happen. Kind of don't take it on a retail level, but look at it a little bit more behind the scenes. And that's what I started doing in 2004, and that's what got me writing Family of Secrets. Around the same time, I also started a nonprofit organization, Who, What, Why, without any funds or resources, just because I thought, oh my God, I got to do my part to save the world. I mean, the journalism is not leveling with people. They're not telling them the truth. And if you don't tell people the truth, you know, it's like they say that, you know, a village needs clean water or the village dies. Well, a democracy needs clean information or it dies. This is what occurred to me, is that we don't really understand what's going on. And I know that because I didn't know what was going on. And so we started talking about things like climate change and the growing plutocracy in this country. The fact that we elected a man who, what was it, hope you can believe in or whatever his slogan was, you know. And he's not in charge. That's the thing that people don't get. And this is really what I discovered. This is what Family of Secrets is about. It's that George W. Bush wasn't in charge either, because it's a culture. And there are thousands and thousands of people who are part of this particular culture, just like there are thousands of whatever culture you feel that you belong to, who are in another culture. And they work for police departments, and they work for corporations and that are involved with the military-industrial complex and so forth. And they have a very different view of the world, very different value system, very different appreciation of democracy, what it can be and what it should be. There's so much propaganda about how democratic America is. Have you noticed that? There's more flag waving. There's more. I was on a radio show a few days ago, and it was a liberal show, nationally syndicated, but the usual host wasn't there, and they had this guest host, and she announced her liberal bona fides, and then she proceeded to talk about the Boston Marathon bombing, which I'd like to talk about a little bit, which we've been covering extensively on Who, What, Why. They invited me on to talk about the Boston Marathon bombing. I assumed they had read my stuff. Well, I guess she hadn't, because she said, don't know about you, but I am wearing my Boston Strong T-shirt. And maybe she asked me if I was, and I said, listen, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but I am just not into the propaganda and the myth-making stuff. I'm here to talk about what really happened in Boston and what it means about the way that they were able to basically declare martial law and force everyone to stay in their homes. This had never been done before in this country, that almost nobody spoke about it or asked about it or questioned it, not the media, and not most institutions either, not all those great institutions of higher learning in the Boston area. Those should have been at the forefront of raising questions. They're full of constitutional law professors and so on. Nobody really said anything. And then almost immediately we heard that they'd solved this. Did you notice that? They always solve everything really fast. I mean, they do. They solve everything really, really fast. It's never like Columbo or Agatha Christie. They get it in a second. And so I was thinking, boy, that FBI is really good. I mean, they're so good. And then I thought, you know, when I was working on Family of Secrets and I discovered that George H.W. Bush couldn't remember where he was when John F. Kennedy was shot, but I became interested in the Kennedy assassination, and I was struck by that the FBI was so incompetent that they had Lee Henry Oswald, they had Harvey Lee Oswald, they couldn't find the files. And I thought either they're incredibly incompetent or they're doing that deliberately or some combination of the two, both and any combination, all pretty bad. But guess what? Here we are 50 years later, and they're doing the exact same stuff. We have an article on Who What Why, I hope you'll take a look at, about the report that just came out from the inspectors general of all these different alphabet agencies, where they are, you know, deliberately released it at the time of the first anniversary of the bombing. And it's the most astonishing document, because if you read it very quickly, it's kind of boring and hard to fathom. It'd be sort of get a sense that they say, well, you know, they didn't do everything they could, but they did something, and there were some things we would do differently, and that's the end of it. That's, by the way, that's what all reports say. And then I realized that what these inspectors general were basically saying was their hands were tied. They couldn't really dig in. They themselves had been obstructed by these agencies. They had to black out or redact a whole section, the most interesting and important section, which had to do with what relationship, if any, might have existed between the U.S. government and the alleged bombers themselves several years prior to the bombing. Well, you would think people would be interested. The media was not interested in this. Well, nobody seemed interested in that. Well, yeah, they knew them, but they didn't know them that well. I mean, you know, hello. I mean, it's just incredible. And so I was looking at this, and I saw that this one FBI agent who had been interacting with the Tsarnaev family, I particularly love this story, because when they wrote about what he did, here's what he did. The Russians said, we have some information about this kid and his family, and we think that he's involved with some sort of terrorist activities, and we urge you to take a look at him. Now, I mean, that's pretty much all the U.S. government seems to be in business these days, is homeland security. So you would assume, well, they jump right on it. Well, let me ask you quickly, what would you do if you got a report that there was a potential terrorist in your midst? What would you do? See, now, look how intelligent this man is. So he's already qualified to be the director of the FBI, because none of them thought of that. So what they did instead, they didn't put him under surveillance. You know what they went? They went to talk to him, and they said, are you a terrorist? I kid you not. You have to read this. You know. And then they went to their neighbors, and they said, is your neighbor a terrorist? And they were like, no, I don't think so. Girlfriend? No, not that I know of. Okay, clean bill of health. I swear, this is what happened. And then I think the Russians indicated that, you know, he was going to maybe go to Russia or Chechnya and so forth. And he goes. When he goes, there are normal flags that are supposed to be raised. And I know, because they harassed me at the airport, you know. And so they did nothing to him. And when he was coming back through, somehow the border people who were monitoring, who knew a little bit about him, the flag was taken down. In other words, he was supposed to sail through. And this was very, very important, because 9/11 was almost the exact same thing. All those guys were given those visas and stuff, and you know, Michael Springman, the U.S. consul, was objecting over the years to all of these guys who were, and he was saying, I don't, you know, they're lying and they want visas, and I can tell that this is not kosher, a funny term to use in Saudi Arabia, but the higher ups just ordered him to admit all these people. And that's how we got them all, you know, in the U.S. training to fly planes. And so it's a very similar thing, again, that they let these guys in. Now you say, well, what could possibly be going on here? And it seems to me, after years of studying this stuff, that really here's how it works. How does the FBI have such an incredible track record? How is it that they're always able to nail somebody? Anybody want to take a guess? They set them up. Okay. Something like that. Basically what you do, you know, they remember the motto, the FBI always gets its man. And then it occurred to me, they always get their man because it's their man. They know these guys, you know, they're in cahoots with them. They're going out for beers with them. And so it's a great system. It's a kind of corruption. If you look at the FBI, they do this stuff all the time and they get away with it all the time. You'll see in Family of Secrets that I discovered some really astonishing things about the Kennedy assassination, about Watergate, about a lot of these things. And I discovered that many of these traumas in this country are always presented as these complicated, convoluted things you can never get to the bottom of. It turns out you can get to the bottom of them. And most of them have the same cast of characters until those people pass from the scene and then their children seem to take on the mantle. And so this is what you call deep politics, which is the idea that there's politics and then there's deep politics. And what I mean is there's the sort of superficial stuff, you know, Sarah Palin is annoying, you know, or Dick Cheney is evil or something like that. But that's the kind of, I call that the cartoon version of history. The reality is these people don't operate on their own. There are groups of people who say, who should we run? You know, Dick Cheney was told to become the CEO of Halliburton. I mean, he was on a hunting trip, and the guys came in and said, Dick, we decided you're going to be the CEO of Halliburton. He said, oh, okay. And then, you know, they decided somehow he was going to be vice president. And so these people don't do this in a vacuum. There's a whole sort of culture and a system that perpetuates these things. And what frustrates me is that when you talk about these things, they attack you. And they use these pejorative terms. My favorite one is conspiracy theorist, which actually doesn't mean anything. It just means you don't accept a conventional version. But there are a lot of things that are not the way we're told. And it is the instinct of institutions of all kinds to cover up. It goes back to stuff like that polio vaccine where, do you remember that, the first round, and they gave it to all these kids, and they got polio. One of these doctors in New Orleans wanted to show how safe it was, and he gave it to his kids, and they got polio, you know. And so they were all horrified, and they had to cover this up because it would just destroy them, the faith and the system and so on. And so this is always going on, and that's the importance of doing the journalism. Anyway, Boston bombing, real-time deep politics, because that first week, the second I heard that this thing happened, I went, oh, boy, because I don't know what it is. Maybe it's so many years of looking at those color-coded alerts and then they don't turn into anything and the timing of them always around elections and things like that. And I thought, these people are taking advantage of us and they're using, you know, they're tightening the screws at key moments. And why wouldn't they do that? That's a very valuable control mechanism. And so looking at the Boston bombing, somehow, you know, because I'd been thinking that ever since 9/11, there really were zero, as far as I know, real terrorist attacks on U.S. soil. Now, you have to think about, and I thought, how do they sustain this? Because if you go back to the early 90s, anybody remember the peace dividend? Anybody remember that? It didn't happen. We were told that's the end of history. Remember Francis Fukuyama or whatever, and swords shall be beaten into plowshares and so forth. And it didn't happen. And in fact, there was no reduction of any note in the military spending. And then in addition to all of that and all the foreign threats, then we got Homeland Security, this giant boondoggle, which is the greatest cash cow for all these companies. And so anyway, so the Boston bombing. So I don't know what happened to me. I just get these instincts. As soon as I heard about that bombing, I was like, oh, my God, I get a bad feeling about this one. It's too perfect. It's tax day. You know, it's what they call Patriots Day. It's the Boston Marathon, this, you know, hallowed family event, you know, in Boston, you know, the home of the American Revolution. And this these bombs go up, and I say, oh, boy, I got a bad feeling about this. So the next day, I was talking to somebody who's involved with fundraising at a large university, and she was sort of going to give us some advice. And then she said, what do you think about that Boston bombing? Do you think there's more to the story? And I paused, and then I said, I do think there's more to the story. And she said, what do you mean? And I said, well, I just, from my experience, I wouldn't be surprised if it turns out that whoever did it or whoever we are told did it turns out to have more connections than they will admit and that there may be some more awareness on the part of the authorities than they're going to admit. And this woman became so angry at me. I mean, she's like 92 years old and she's still working, and she's a big, you know, liberal Democrat, and she just begins almost like shaking, and she kind of wanted us out of her place. And it's very upsetting. This stuff is very, very upsetting. It causes cognitive dissonance, and particularly for people who are out there waving flags all the time and saying my country right or wrong and so on. This stuff just doesn't compute. It rubs like, you know, fingernails on a chalkboard. And so people fight this stuff, and they call you names, or they just become furious. But I had a feeling, and then the next day nothing happened. You remember there was, very briefly, they said there was a Saudi guy they had held, and there was another guy who disappeared. And by the way, they found his body in a river. That story was never followed up on. These are all people who were early, you know, mentioned in relation to the story. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, people are nervous. The media is doing its usual Malaysia-era-style non-coverage. Nothing's going on. There's this weird thing on Wednesday. They suddenly announce that they have some suspects, and they're at the courthouse, and suddenly there's a bomb threat, and the courthouse is evacuated. Nothing ever comes of that. That was weird. Thursday, nothing's happening. And suddenly, 5 o'clock, whoop, there they are. Do you remember that? It just, if you had your TV on, suddenly, just out of nowhere, they go live to this press conference, and there's the head of the FBI office there, and suddenly they got these images up there. Very incriminating images. People at a sporting event wearing hats and backpacks. Wow. But I sort of looked at that, and then I noticed that everybody else had hats and backpacks. I wasn't sure what it was about these guys, and they said, these are suspects. And I thought, well, why are they suspects? That's interesting. And they said, we don't know who they are. If anybody has any information, please come forward. That was 5 o'clock on Thursday. Later in the evening, we heard suddenly that a police officer had been shot. And I was like, oh, my God, that's like the Kennedy assassination. Remember, they didn't know who had shot the president. Suddenly a police officer is shot, and then they identify, supposedly Oswald dropped his wallet. I mean, you know, shot the guy and left his wallet and those business cards so everybody could get in touch with him, you know. And, you know, this was sort of similar and kind of weird. Oh, and then a little later, carjacking. And then this guy escapes from the car, and the first thing he does is he says, this guy carjacked me, but it wasn't enough that he had a gun. I don't know about you, but if a guy has a gun and he carjacks me, I'm pretty much going to do whatever he wants. But apparently that wasn't enough, so the man had to say to him, do you know who I am? And he said, you're a guy with a gun. He said, no. I'm the Boston Marathon bomber. And he said, oh, I also just shot a police officer. And I thought, that is the weirdest darn thing, you know, because honestly, you want the driver, if you're carjacking him, to just kind of be calm and not imagine a larger scenario, just that he wants to drive you and that's it. So that seemed very strange to me. And then we began looking at all these things. We looked at the shooting of this police officer. They made a huge big deal about the fact what a hero he was, a first responder, they say. A year later, they still say. It's all a lie, and it's disgraceful, and it really is tragic, because obviously his family, I'm sure I can't talk to them about this, because they want to be proud of him. Well, they should be proud of him, because he was a good police officer at MIT, and the kids liked him, and that's enough. But he was not a hero in anything. This original story they put out, and if you ask people what happened, they say, oh, they shot him in a, you know, he was trying to stop them. And, you know, that's not what happened. It took days and weeks for this to come out, and almost nobody knows the real story. The real story is, not only did he not confront them, he never saw them. And, you know, they finally said, oh, well, he was sitting in his car on the street, and they came along, and they wanted to take his gun. Well, that's not what happened either. What happened was, he was sitting in his car wedged between buildings on a completely dark campus. Now, why would they even be on the campus? You're fleeing for your life, supposedly. The FBI is showing your pictures, and you're going to go to a darkened campus to see if you can find a cop sitting between two darkened buildings, and then you're going to shoot him in the head and not take his gun? It doesn't make any sense. And so what we do at Who, What, Why is we just go, you know, I like to say I went to the Columbo School of Journalism. I just go, like, oh, you know, I just don't quite, I can't see, I mean, I can't quite, you know, why? You know, it doesn't make any sense to me. It doesn't make any sense to me. And so that didn't make any sense. And then this took me almost 9 months of looking at the story of the carjacking victim. By the way, who knows the name of the carjacking victim, since he's the one who was the recipient of the confession? Anybody know their name? His name? Danny? What's his last name? It's just Danny? See, isn't that a little strange? We don't know Danny's last name. It actually turns out Danny is not his first name. Until recently, something weird is happening again. They never showed his face. He was always in shadow. They altered his voice, and they never told us who he was. So here's the guy who has the confession. The reason we think those two kids did it is because of him. Because otherwise, what did they show us? One guy got mad at me. This is a guy's a journalism professor who lives in Boston. He said, "We know they did it." I said, "Well, how do you know it?" He said, "We saw them planting the bombs." So I said, "You saw them planting the bombs?" He said, "It was all over TV." I said, wait a minute. What are you talking about?" It turns out they never showed us them planting bombs. They've released some stills, and we'll have some articles about whether those stills are real or accurate and what they actually show. But it's just one thing after another. It's like they got an endless bag of tricks. And so you look at this stuff and you say, none of this adds up. This Danny, by the way, we found that he told different versions to different news organizations. In some, he was carjacked for 90 minutes, which is a really long time. You know, it's a small area there in Boston. Where would you go for 90 minutes? Another account was 60 minutes, which is still pretty long. Another one was 30 minutes. And another one was, get this, that he was not carjacked at all. He actually told that to a news organization early on. He said that they just took his car. It's astonishing. This is the biggest story in the country, and nobody seems to know any of this stuff. And so we write about all this, and we found many, many more things about that story. It goes on and on and on. I mean, it's truly staggering. You can see photos that have been altered, statements that they made that make no sense. We're working on about five or six stories right now, so I don't want to say too much about them, but it's really unbelievable. And for an investigative journalist, this is almost like a dream story, because it's like an Easter egg hunt. You know, the stuff that is wrong is everywhere. And yet nobody's looking at this. The media is not looking at this. And you could say, well, you know, I could ask you who you like. Public radio, not looking at this. Liberal weekly and biweekly magazines, not looking at this. Websites that are progressive, blogs with a lot of traffic, not writing a word about any of this. There's a complete silence. And for anybody who lived in Weimar Germany or lived in Chile or Argentina or something, this is a very terrifying time, folks, because nobody's doing anything and nobody's saying anything. There is a conspiracy of silence. And so I do want to start wrapping up here, but what I'd like to say is this. It doesn't have to be that way. It does not have to be that way.
Russ Baker on the Boston bombing, the deep state, and the failure, once again, of the corporate news media. Baker's website is whowhatwhy.org. The original video of his talk was provided by Pirate TV Seattle. Many thanks to them. And thank you for listening to New World Notes. Find us on the web at newworldnotes.blogspot.com. From Darkest Connecticut, this is Kenneth Doust, urging you to turn off that TV set, try to get the facts, question authority, keep the aspidistra flying, and most of all, illegitimi non carborundum. Peace.